Good morning. How's everyone doing today? Good. So over the past couple weeks, as I've been kind of preparing for today, I've been very, 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 very tempted to call in sick. In fear of looking and sounding crazy. And the more I stressed about the details that we're going into today and this weekend, the more I thought about fear. And you see, this is an odd concept for me to grasp, this fear. Because you see, I love scary movies. I love getting scared. Not the like the blood and guts and psychos, things like that. I'm talking about like mystery, suspense, you know, the plot twist that comes out of nowhere, those kind of movies. Kind of like the last 10 minutes of The Village. Has anyone seen The Village? Or The Sixth Sense? Or possibly the greatest mystery film of all time, Scooby-Doo. You know, the one where they reunite on the island and they figure out all these strange occurrences. That's the one. But even if this movie, even if Scooby-Doo didn't give you chills and, you know, leave you sleeping on your parents' floor, you know you've seen those movies and you know you've been in situations that have kind of left your skin crawling and made you feel kind of uncomfortable, right? And real life can be a lot like that. Real life can be absolutely terrifying, especially when we're faced with something big. And choosing to live a life as what I like to call a stander rather than a sitter will mean that there's going to be a lot of times throughout your life that you are going to be afraid. And the more I thought about this, the more I knew that I needed some insight. So I opened up my Bible and I started flipping through and reading. And eventually I came across this verse that eased up a lot of emotions that I was having about this morning. And it's from 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. And it says, God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power. Sadly, these standalone moments are going to be the case more often than we would like. When I was younger, there were a lot of times when I felt like I was the only person standing up for what was right. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of you have felt the same way, at least once or twice, or maybe 100 times. But if you haven't yet, get ready, because it's coming. And you see, standing up and living out God's call in your life is inevitably going to lead to these standalone moments. And youth, I'm mainly speaking to you guys this morning, especially seniors, as you are preparing for this kind of next step. The Bible is absolutely chock full of stories about people who stood up for God and who made a stand when no one else would. And the one we're probably most familiar with is David and Goliath. We all know about David, how he conquered Goliath with a slingshot and became one of the greatest kings in the history of Israel. He was a mighty warrior, a strong leader, extremely wealthy. He was greatly respected. But way before that happened, before any of those accomplishments became a reality, David was just a normal teenager, waiting and searching for his purpose. Now, we may have heard this story a million times, but this time I want to focus on who David was when he walked out onto that battlefield. Let's not just toss aside the story as a Sunday school lesson we hear about every now and then. Let's really focus in on the call of David. Now, there are a lot of ways that people might describe David because, you know, he's one of the Bible's greatest heroes. And so people would probably imagine him as this Brad Pitt type guy with muscles, kind of like myself, you know, something like that. Or they think he's quick and smart, like Peyton Manning on the football field. But in reality, he was none of those things. If you could think of a contemporary example, my immediate thought of the perfect guy that would play David is Napoleon Dynamite. Is everyone familiar with Napoleon Dynamite? I know the younger people are. So Napoleon Dynamite is this dorky, lanky, glasses, curly hair, acne, super socially awkward kid. But like Napoleon, David was underappreciated by pretty much everyone who knew him, even his brothers and his father. He spent a lot of time writing songs on his harp while he was tending to his sheep, which meant he probably didn't have a ton of friends. And also David did this like crazy dance in front of everyone, and his wife even made fun of him for it. So he's doesn't have a lot going for him right now. So what about this whole David and Goliath story? Because it almost seems too cliche to have any relevance for us today. But if you really try to close your eyes and imagine David as someone like yourself, someone maybe a little awkward, maybe uncool, or even a little nerdy, the story starts to look a little different. Now in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 4 and then 8 through 11, we get a clear picture of kind of the scene before David walks in into the picture. And from the description, it sounds like no one is going to be able to save Israel, especially not a little kid. We read, "The Philistine army had a hero named Goliath, who was from the town of Gath and was over 9 feet tall. Goliath went out and shouted to the army of Israel, 'Why are you lining up for battle? I'm the best soldier in our army, and all of you are in Saul's army. Choose your best soldier and come out and fight me. If he can kill me, our people will be your slaves. But if I kill him, your people will be our slaves. Here and now, I challenge Israel's whole army. Choose someone to fight me.' Saul and his men heard what Goliath said, but they were so frightened of Goliath that they couldn't do a thing. So King Saul and the Israelites are camped out on one side of this hill in the Valley of Elah, and Goliath and his bros are over on the other side, and David shows up to check on his brothers, who were warriors in King Saul's army. Now, David isn't old enough or strong enough to be a soldier, but when he hears Goliath running his mouth, David speaks up like he has been leading this army for years. "Your Majesty," David said, "this Philistine shouldn't turn us into cowards. I'll go out and fight him myself." "You don't have a chance against him," Saul replied. "You're only a boy, and he's been a soldier all his life." But David told him, "Your Majesty, I take care of my father's sheep, and when one of them is dragged off by a lion or a bear, I go after it and beat the wild animal until it lets the sheep go. If the wild animal turns and attacks me, I grab it by the throat and kill it. Sir, I have killed lions and bears that way, and I can kill this worthless Philistine. He shouldn't have made fun of the army of the living God. The Lord has rescued me from the claws of lions and bears, and he will keep me safe from the hands of this Philistine." "All right," Saul answered. "Go ahead and fight him, and I hope the Lord will help you." Up until this point in his life, David was a nobody. He was just this weird kid who hung out with sheep and probably smelt really bad. Yet, one day, he was going to be a great king. But before he would even come close to doing that, David basically stood up and said, "Watch this. I can kick that humongous guy into next week." Where did he get the courage to say something like that? I want to take a look at three characteristics that kind of set David apart. The first one, David had a wingman. When Goliath saw that David was just a healthy, good-looking boy, he made fun of him. Do you think I'm a dog? Goliath asked. Is that why you've come after me with a stick? Come on. When I'm finished with you, I'll feed you to the birds and wild animals. David answered, You've come out to fight me with a sword and a spear and a dagger, but I've come out to fight you in the name of the Lord All-Powerful. Today the Lord will help me defeat you, and I'll knock you down and cut off your head, and I'll feed the bodies of the other Philistine soldiers to the birds and wild animals. When Goliath started forward, David ran toward him. He put a rock in his sling and swung the sling around by its straps, and when he let go of one strap, the rock flew out and hit Goliath on the forehead. It cracked his skull, and he fell face down on the ground. David defeated Goliath with a sling and a rock. He killed him without even using a sword. See, David was able to be so brave because he knew that he had God on his side. And talk about confidence. David was insanely fearless. He stared Goliath in the face and he declared war. Before he ever even threw the rock, he knew that he had won because he trusted God that much. See, when we accept Christ, we also accept victory. We may not defeat guys who are 9 feet tall or bigger than us, but that may not be God's plan for our lives. See, we've always got the winning hand, even when it looks like we're losing. Because just like David, we have God on our side. 2, David was a stander. Everyone on the hillside that day had been shaking in their tents for the last 40 days. Verse 24 says that when the Israelite soldiers saw Goliath, they were scared and ran off. Not David. His faith made him fearless. And he was the only one willing to stand for what was right. Living in pursuit of God's will for your life is going to be a very scary thing. I know, I've been there, I've done that, I've read the books, I've seen the movies. When life is unfair and when things don't go our way, or it seems like no one else around us gives a rip about God, that is when Satan works fast and furious to scare you into doing the wrong thing. In these moments, it can be very easy to question God's intentions and wonder why you're the only one willing to stand. Sometimes the circumstances of your life may seem unfair. And there will be times when you're faced with a question about life circumstances that doesn't have an immediate answer. But remember, being fearless doesn't mean you have all the answers. It just means that you're willing to step forward in the midst of those questions because you trust that God has all the answers. 3, David wasn't concerned with others' opinions. No one believed in David. No one thought that he could conquer Goliath. Even his own brother made fun of him. In verse 28, we see David's oldest brother, Eliab, heard him talking with the soldiers. Eliab was angry at him and said, What are you doing here anyway? Who's taking care of that little flock of sheep out in the desert? You spoiled brat, you came here just to watch the fighting, didn't you? In verse 33, King Saul questions David's abilities. You don't have a chance against him. You're only a boy. It could be that there is someone in your life, maybe even a close family member, who doesn't recognize the strength that you have. But don't let their lack of belief keep you from believing in yourself. David didn't let his brother or the king shake his confidence. Living fearlessly is about living in confidence and having faith that God is your wingman. In moments of doubt and in times of temptation, use that to remind yourself of who you are. As a freshman in high school, I was, and still am, not very tall. I was not very athletic. And throughout high school, I had to work very, very hard to get average grades. And when I graduated, I was a very underconfident young man. I was already partway through college when I began to really understand who I was. 1 Peter 2:9 through 10. You are the ones chosen by God, chosen for the high calling of priestly work, chosen to be a holy people, God's instruments to do His work and speak out for Him, to tell others of the night and day difference He made for you, from nothing to something, from rejected to accepted. David was dwarfed by a great giant from Gath. Unlike his brothers who were much older and were warriors, David's daily responsibilities amounted to nothing more than running around a field with some sheep. But none of that stopped him from living fearlessly. He knew who he was, and he was ready to fight. And he didn't allow others' perceptions of him or the fact that he didn't really have a strong resume to get in the way of God using him. And here's the catch. You have to do your part. You have to be proactive. David didn't just sit and wait. He stood up fearlessly. So you're probably thinking, especially you guys, come on, Phil, this is just a story. This doesn't have anything to do with me. My story is not as pretty as David's. I haven't always honored God with my life. And that's probably right. That may be so. But if you read ahead, you'd see that David does some pretty disgusting things. Later on, he lusted after another man's wife. He had an affair with her, got her pregnant, tried to trick her husband into sleeping with her so that he thought it was his child, and then eventually had him killed to try to cover up the whole thing. Yet of all the great men whose stories fill the pages of the Bible, David is the only man God says is a man after his own heart. What? God actually said that a lying, lusting, cheating, deceiving murderer is a man after his own heart? Yes. On the battlefield in front of others, David was the man. But in his private life, behind closed doors, David made some horrible mistakes. But God still chose him to do great things. You see, the point is, if God can use David, even after all of the mistakes he made, he can use us. And remember that the ultimate goal of being made into the man or woman God desires isn't perfection. It's about becoming a man or woman after God's own heart. Someone who wants to be more like God every day. David's life story shows us that God is not in the business of using perfect people. God is in the business of using imperfect people to fulfill His perfect plan. People willing to set aside their fears and stand up. There are a lot of things that I don't understand. I don't understand why there have to be mosquitoes. I don't understand why people have to get zits, or why the Dobson fly exists. Which, does anyone know what a Dobson fly is? No? Okay, a Dobson fly is this little bug that stays in a dormant state for years. And then when it hatches, it dies like a couple days later. Just pretty, sounds pointless. And I will admit that I will never, ever understand girls, even though I'm engaged. I don't understand why God let Herod kill innocent babies, or why Adolf Hitler was allowed to murder millions of Jews, why he allows tornadoes to take innocent lives, or child molesters to get away with what they do, or thousands to die in a terrorist attack. It's all a mystery, a blur. But there is one thing I do know, that God has all the answers. And if you trust Him, then you don't need to know it all, because you know the one that does. There's no one better to have as a wingman. than the one who knows everything. When you're a man or woman after God's own heart, every day the doubters of the world will try to keep you from standing. Immorality is going to try to trip you up and make you feel unworthy. And there are going to be giant-sized odds staring you in the face, telling you that there is no way you're going to win. So what are you going to do? You can sit comfortably on the sidelines, and it may seem easy and safe, but it will also be dull and unfulfilling. Or you can be like David and realize that you were made for more. Anyone can sit, and believe me, you can probably find a million ways why you should do that. I'm sure David had a long list of those reasons of why he couldn't defeat Goliath. But see, David traded that long list in for the one reason that he knew he could: God. I want to end with a prayer I heard when I was down on a mission trip in the Dominican. It's actually an old martyred Zimbabwe pastor's prayer that I often read to kind of urge myself to step out. I'm part of the fellowship of the unashamed. I have the Holy Spirit's power. The die has been cast. I have stepped over the line. The decision has been made. I am a disciple of His. I won't look back, let up, slow down, back away, or be still. My past is redeemed. My present makes sense. My future is secure. I'm finished and done with low living, sight walking, smooth knees, colorless dreams, tamed visions, worldly talking, cheap giving, and dwarfed goals. I no longer need preeminence, prosperity, position, promotions, plaudits, or popularity. I don't have to be right, first, tops, recognized, praised, regarded, or rewarded. I now live by faith, lean in His presence, walk by patience, am uplifted by prayer, and I labor with power. My face is set. My gate is fast. My goal is heaven. My road is narrow. My way rough. My companions few. My guide reliable. My mission is clear. I cannot be balked, compromised, detoured, lured away, turned back, deluded, or delayed. I will not flinch in the face of sacrifice, hesitate in the presence of the enemy, pander at the pool of popularity, or meander through the maze of mediocrity. I won't give up, shut up, let up until I have stayed up, stored up, prayed up, paid up, preached up for the cause of Christ. I am a disciple of Jesus. I will go until He comes, give until I drop, preach until all know, and work until He stops me. And when He comes for His own, He will have no problem recognizing me. My banner will be clear. Friends, you have been called to stand. So I challenge you to stand up and to step out. Don't look back, look forward. Get ready to show everyone what God can do through you, and be insanely fearless when you say, "Watch this."